Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Adventure Zone Steeplechase, a Justin McElroy fantasy.
A Justin McElroy joint.
My name is Justin McElroy, and I will be your game master for this adventure.
I'm Travis McElroy.
Like Captain N? Are we all supposed to introduce ourselves?
I don't know what's happening.
Probably Justin. Not.
It's an event. Why wouldn't you introduce yourselves at the beginning of a program? This is de rigueur. My name is Justin McElroy. Someone's starting right now, right? Like, they're starting. They heard about this podcast.
Yeah.
From the friends.
Yeah.
Got into it because they've been waiting for the J-Man to take the rudder. And now we're here. And my name is Justin McElroy. They know that because it's mainly the J-Heads. Here
that are
so you guys, please.
J-head sounds like a derogative term for people who possess an addiction to, I don't know what a J, I guess
jumping.
Jumping. Anyway, this is Griffin McElroy, and perfect. I also love to jump.
Thanks. Just the name is good. Travis. Oh, I actually ruined yours. Old man. What's your name?
I am Clint McElroy. You mean me, not my character.
Right. Yeah, not your character. Oh, just a brief note, a couple things before we start. Dad, if I see you put another bite of food in your mouth while we're recording, I will jump through the screen and kill you. That's the first one. I'm a little on edge, so just don't eat on the podcast anymore. That's like the thing one.
Yeah. We know that you did just wake up at 9:30 in the morning, and so your body probably does need caloric intake to function.
It's so wild now, but just to be in the inversion of like dad sleeping in and me and Justin and Griffin having to wake up early with kids. It makes me mad at you.
He's earned it.
It's not fair.
It's not fair.
I went through many years of leaving early.
Welcome to the world of Steeplechase. I've been working on this for many months now. I've written this. I'm not nervous. I wrote it. Introduction.
Okay.
And I wrote an introduction.
Unbelievable.
From all my work, so I'd like to begin the table setting now.
And let's just say no goofs until Justin gets to, until
yeah,
Justin does
it. Justin needs to focus, Dad.
So there are nights.
Let's take a second run at this.
There are many nights and other wizards. And they are all are fighting.
Oh, sorry. It was K-Knights. Okay, sorry. Go on.
You are the children of knights and wizards. And they're combined. You're night wizards. And welcome to the court of the night wizards. I'm Justin McElroy.
Sorry, one more time. Is it K-Knight or is it just N-Knight? I'm so confused.
You're half knight, half wizard. You have both the powers of both and the weaknesses of neither.
Right. Armor
and
sword,
but magic.
What
if I'm a wizard who goes out in the daytime?
This is not. Anything.
So we really went off that no goof rule real quick.
This is all serious.
Once it hits serious mode, though, the goofs will come to a complete stop.
You think so?
Okay,
huh?
welcome to Steeplechase. I would like to first tell you a little bit. Here's what we're going to do. This is session zero. We're just starting. I am wildly uncomfortable because I haven't done this before. And my brothers and dad are going to help me through it. We're all going to do this as a family. It's a team building exercise. Not a podcast. It's a team building exercise.
We're going to do some trust falls, some low ropes courses.
We are going to be playing the game Blades in the Dark. And I'm going to tell you more about that right after I tell you a little bit about this world. It is set in the future. Not like 1,000 years, but maybe a couple hundred from now. And our story takes place. Well, I'm getting ahead of myself. Carmine Denton was a farmer's son in rural Georgia. This is the story everybody knows. He always wanted to be an entertainer, a storyteller, someone who would lift us up with these incredible stories and bring us together with valuable lessons. Carmine, as soon as he could scrape together the money, founded a company that we now know today as Dentonic. The first name in entertainment. Denton started small. He was operating a string of traveling carnivals at state fairs, and they evolved into the regional theme parks throughout the U.S. I think like a chain of Six Flags or, you know, Busch Gardens, those parks. Eventually, like, Denton was fighting. He had all these ideas and dreams, but he was fighting municipalities and state and local governments at every turn. Every time he wanted to expand or change something or do something different, he was constantly having to fight with these groups. So he did something very dramatic. In 2030, he grew tired of fighting, and he disassembled the parks. And he sold the land to Chinese multinationals. This would have been in 2030. And he focused all his time into just one steeplechase. It was nestled into a big expanse of the same rural countryside in Georgia that he once called home. Steeplechase started like the other parks, you know, top-notch roller coasters, decent food, nothing to write home about. But then, rather than sell the previous parks piecemeal, he brought them to Steeplechase. And he started organizing them and building them up and taking all these different mechanical parts, all these different worlds, into a real, like, epicenter of entertainment. And he could have stopped there. But as we all know, Denton's motto is that he never knew when to stop dreaming. He expanded Steeplechase in 2040 with a second gate, a satellite park, if you will, the Kingdom of Ephemera. Now, Ephemera, this kingdom is different. It was not just a theme park. It was immersive. It was a world where you could go and live out your fantasies, as long as they were of the knights and wizards variety. And this was wildly successful. We'll learn more about the Kingdom of Ephemera in a bit, but you should know that he continued to grow these parks and expand these new gates, and the Denton family continued to grow these parks. And when they ran out of land, they went the only direction they could up. So now these lands, these lairs, as they're called, are these immersive worlds for the rich to come and experience their deepest fantasies. And you three work there. You are employees of Dentonic. You are employees of Steeplechase. And you are going to find your fortune there, in the cracks between the fantasy. There where people are misguided. They're looking over here while they're having this magical family moment. You'll be the ones with your hands in the pockets. We're going to meet you, but we are going to talk about this game first, Blades in the Dark. Now,
this is going great. So you're crushing it. You're doing a wonderful job. I don't know if you need the massaging.
Oh,
but if you are,
guys,
I'll put
rule one: massage anytime. If anything's even palatable, just like
I'm intrigued.
Oh, it's I'm on board. I'm in. Yeah.
So let me read this exact. I'm going to read this exact text for attribution purposes, and then we'll talk more about it. This work is based on Blades in the Dark, which can be found at bladesinthedark.com. It's a product of 1/7 Design, developed and authored by John Harper, and licensed for our use under the Creative Commons Attribution 3.0 unported license, one of my favorite licenses. What a thrill it is. I will just say that is the, and you will see this system. I will say about this book very quickly, it is the best, hands down, the best one of these I've ever written. It never gets bogged down in mechanics. It's always bringing you back to practical application. It's so well written. There's a great thing that he says, that John Harper says at the beginning of his games, that he attributes to a friend of his named Avery, and I wanted to say that now. It is the number one rule is to play your characters like you're driving a stolen car, and I really like that metaphor, and that is what we are going to be doing. Blades in the Dark is a game about bad people doing bad
Justin,
things.
I'm so sorry. I built my whole character using Beyblades in the Dark. I did, that's
okay. Something like this. That is
so
fine,
sorry.
Travis.
Let him get one out of his Travis, if you can just give us a time to rip, like let him get it out of his system.
Oh, Griffin, by saying the word Beyblades, I have used up all of my Beyblade knowledge.
Oh, okay.
I have now used it all up, and Justin, you may continue.
Okay. So it's a game about scoundrels doing crimes. There's different kinds of criminals and bad people. But the core of the game, the metaphor of the game is that it is in terms of scores or heists or that like crimes. You know, you're going to do crimes.
Yeah.
You're going to do crimes in this world. We're going to talk mechanical. You're going to be part of a crew, a criminal crew. You're each going to have your own criminal background and your own criminal skills that you're going to bring to this little group that you have. We're going to pick a type of character class here. You're also going to pick a crew. And that crew is going to have different relationships with the world, different ways that they focus on interacting with the world. And we were still kind of hammering this part out. So that is something I think that we can come to a consensus on once we've met all of our characters. So with that all being said, and boys, please feel free to, if there's questions or you want to stop me or I missed something or, I mean, and if you just feel like interrupting, you know, keep that to yourself. But if you have something real good, then please, by all means.
But how can we tell if it's good or not until we say it out loud, Justin?
The Travis McElroy story.
Yeah.
Okay. so let's start with you know what, Travis? Let's pan to you. The camera pans to you. Let's meet your scoundrel.
I am playing Beef Punchley.
But wait, hold on, wait. Did you change the surname?
What was it?
I thought it was Beef Strongly.
Oh, no, it's always been Punchley, but
Beef Punchley is extremely good.
Yeah. Now, which is better, Beef Punchley or Beef Punchkins?
Not Beef Punchkins. Beef Punchkins feels too cute.
Okay, yeah, Beef Punchley. But
that's like a Smurf name.
Right. He is a cutter, which in this game system is a dangerous and intimidating fighter.
Okay.
He is a very large man. Very, as his name might imply, very beefy, former like heavyweight boxer. But this is not his real name. Beef Punchley is his alias. His real name is Lyndon Julius.
I want you to know at the top, I will never use that name.
No, everyone calls him Beef. It's fine to call him Beef. Okay, but good. That is more of his nickname than it is his real name. But as I said, he is a cutter, primarily focused in like hand-to-hand fighting and grappling and that kind of thing. But he is far more intelligent and gentle than he appears. But still, he is, and I have taken the special ability not to be trifled with, which means that he can push himself to do one of the following: perform a feat of physical force that verges on the superhuman, or engage a small gang on equal footing in close combat. Right. How much do you want to know about Beef, Justin?
I would like to know if basically with heritage and background, which is a lot of Blades in the Dark is really narrative, which is, you know, some people might say dismissively, but when you're making a narrative podcast is chef's kiss. So,
yeah, so good.
I'm sorry that I made the chef's kiss noise and also did a chef's kiss. I don't know that I said the words.
I appreciated it. Yeah.
Okay. I would like to know, basically, for heritage and background, I'd like to know your relationship with the park and the company. Like, what's your deal? What's your background with Dentonic and Steeplechase?
So he grew up in a small town, and he hit like puberty growth spurt pretty late. He was like a small, somewhat like nerdy, gentle boy. Like the, you know, Wells for Boys kind of guy.
This is too long. I just want to know about your relationship to the park.
I'm getting there. You said narrative.
You want to leave something on the bone there, Travis. What if somebody's like, I bet you're always a strong kid. And then this is from me to you. If you're always a strong kid, and then you're like, actually, I wasn't. Let me take you inside. I don't need that dense.
Hey, Justin, you're doing a great job GMing so far.
Thank you so much, Travis.
I think so, too.
And so, basically, he then was a heavyweight boxer for a while. Then there was some issues, and he wasn't allowed to do that anymore.
But that's good. I love that shit. Yeah, that's good. You just put that little Chekhov's issue right there on the wall. We'll come back to it.
And so he had a name, right? Everybody was, you know, knew of Beef Punchley the boxer, but he needed work. And so he basically made a deal with Dentonic and Steeplechase to come and be like a representative of Beef Punchley. And we talk about like that they work like at some kind of arcade, or there is some kind of like Punch-Out-esque game that it's like Beef Punchley's Punch-Out. And he's like, hi, it's me. Fight me in my prime. Kind of deal. So he's not quite a mascot, but that's the feel of him.
sorry, but the idea of an arcade game with a picture of Beef Punchley and there's like a balloon coming out of his mouth that says, fight me in my prime.
Yeah.
it's so dire.
Yeah. It's not a flattering or happy circumstance to be in.
You should know that my headcanon for Beef Punchley is already King Hippo from Punch Out, which
perfect.
Is very powerful.
Let me say real quick, actually, because I should have established this. The layer that these three currently work in is called Eustabin. And Eustabin is a layer that is built around nostalgia. It is the idea of taking the experiences that you thought that you would never have again and bringing them directly to you for a very reasonable fee. And you all work in Eustabin. We will talk about, Travis mentioned the arcade that you all are working in, and we'll talk about that. To give you an example, there's like one of the attractions in Eustabin is called Super Slumber Party, where every night there is a gigantic park-wide slumber party where you can have your nails painted and you can eat huge piles of wood fire oven pizza for $13 and absolutely house an entire 12-ounce Mountain Dew that you get to keep all for yourself. You don't share with your brother, no problem. But that is like the kind of experience that used to have been traffics in. It is about the feelings that you – it's not just like – selling you like Funkos with the Greatest American Hero on them. Although Funko Pop, please. Any of my characters are open for licensing for a very reasonable fee. Come at me. Love to get some of those Funkos going. Anyway, but that's Eustabin. It's not just about like retro. It's not retro, right? Retro has that like clanging sort of obvious shilling. This is designed to like actually give you the feelings of being young again, or the feelings of being young in an age that you never got to experience but always seemed very, very pleasant. So Beef Punchley works at an arcade, former puncher, maybe still a puncher. We'll have to see.
Well, he's still a puncher. He was a boxer. There's a term for it.
Oh, so you really have done your homework. Dad, let's go over to you, Clinton McElroy. Tell me about your character.
I am playing Emmerich Dreadway.
Ooh, I like that.
Good, Dad. Yikes.
That's good, Dad.
Emmerich Dreadway is a whisper. And ooh, in this game, okay. It's about as close as we get to magician, would you say?
Yeah.
Wizard.
Someone who deals in the fantastic.
Ooh.
But Emmerich not is Emmerich is slim, waspish is kind of the word I was using. I'm
what is waspish? What is
you
what
mean
is
like white mean? Anglo-Saxon Protestant? Not like he has.
You mean no, wayfish, I mean what? Like, I mean slim and think Vincent Price. I really was thinking like Vincent Price.
I don't. When I think of Vincent Price, I don't normally think what a waspish fellow. But okay.
But he is waspish in the waspy in the like.
Yeah, if you mean
wasp,
like literal, yeah literal wasp. Yeah.
He is a creationeer. Is that the word you?
That's a fucking what? Great word, Mac. It's write it down, okay. Baby. Creationeer.
He is one of those people who he's older. He's been with Dentonix for quite a while. And one of the things that is a key in the newest iteration of attractions and stuff at Steeplechase are these hard light constructs. Do we want to talk about the hard light constructs?
Yeah.
Here.
Yeah, and Dad, since you're sort of the expert in hard light, I think I will be sort of like hopefully collaborating with you on like the specifics of this technology. But the basic idea is I didn't want to have magic as we would think about it in this, but there is a supernatural element to Blades in the Dark. So I started thinking about that like sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic, the Carl Sagan thing. So the big like secret to the success of Dentonix and the reason that they've been able to expand at this and evolve at the speed they have is this technology called hard light, which is basically solid holograms that have shape and form and a physicality to them, which the applications of that technology are, you know, just as wide reaching as you can imagine, to the point where we might think of them as magic. And we are, for this like sort of whisper purpose, is that it is a, it is so advanced. It is basically like a supernatural thing. You are one of the few people who have the like prowess to shape and, you know, rejigger hard light constructions.
And so not just that, magic, right? Because one of the things in Blades in the Dark is ghosts, right?
Right.
So hard light is, yeah, hard light holograms are standing in for ghosts.
And when you first described the sort of like Disney World analog of animatronics.
Yeah.
And this being that, like hard light, like living in quotation marks figures.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's hard light.
I kind of ran with that, and kind of the background was that Emmerich was, if not the main guy that first came up with the hard light constructs, at least he was one of the first innovators with it, was seen mm-hmm. as the father of hard light, and other people in the company have taken credit for it, and
ooh,
Emmerich is not a very forceful person, but found himself demoted, found himself pushed to the side while other people benefited from his genius, and it wrecked his life. I mean, he still works for them, but it's in this very, you know, he's been pushed back to Eustabin. Instead of being one of the innovators, now he's like practically just a maintenance guy who keeps the machines working.
I love this, Dad. What is the special move that you took? We'll get more into like some of these different character classes, but like, what's your special move that you went with?
I think compel in the special ability.
Yeah,
right?
So yeah, the special ability. Which of the special abilities does Emmerich have?
Yeah, I think compel. He can attune to a ghost field hard light field.
Yeah.
And force a nearby ghost to appear and obey a command you give it. This will allow him to use even hard light constructs that he hasn't created.
Mm-hmm.
He will be able to control.
Dad, do you feel like hard light is projected from a source, or hard light is, made by a bunch of tiny nano machines? Like, how do you think hard light works?
I would say that instead of a whole bunch of nanites, I would say there is one
source.
Nucleus, one device that projects
like a little bee.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That you would have a little.
Did you say bee or bead?
Well, I said bee because I'm literally thinking of there's a hard light projection in Red Dwarf, and it's like a little capsule that like projects Rimmer whenever they leave the ship.
Oh, I thought you said bean.
Sure,
but whatever. Okay, this thing is,
we're having a lot of fun here with words that sound like other words.
I think there is some kind of very small device that projects outward and creates these.
So maybe to make that sort of work, you need to find some sort of projection source in the world, something that's doing something else that you can repurpose in that way. Maybe you have some with you. I don't know. We'll figure it out.
Justin, I had a quick question about this world.
Yeah, anything, Travis. Yes.
So we talked about, like, so far, both Dad and I have mentioned, like, that Beef ended up having to get a job there and that Emmerich was, like, demoted but still works there. How much of, like, a ubiquitous employer is Dentonic in this world? Is it, like, at some point, everybody ends up working there? Or is it, like, a much smaller, like, how influential, you know what I mean?
It's the kind of place where you live. It's the kind of place where you post up there. I'm thinking of it like people who do like a tour, you know, on a cruise ship, maybe that sort of metaphor where we are like living there and what have you. But a lot of the people who are there are there for the money, but really money is not that important because they live there. There's this idea of coin in Blades in the Dark, and coin are big chunks of cash. Like it's a coin is like a lot of money. Running around money, you don't really track, right? So like, do I have the money to get a sandwich? Yes, you have sandwich money. It's just assumed, right? It's not that.
I got a life hack.
You're never watching an episode of CSI where they're like, and I'm going to get a cup of coffee. Oh no, I don't have any money for coffee. Let's do a scene of me going back to get some money for coffee from an ATM, yeah. Right?
I want you to know my first action in the game is going to be buying 100 sandwiches. For nice. Nothing, and then selling them in bulk for coin.
Griff, if you buy them in bulk, it's going to cost you coin. We don't have coin. What we have is, this is kind of a slangy thing, but people call them sweets. So rather than coin, you have sweets because it is the equivalent cost of a deluxe two-bedroom suite in the lair of your choice. So a lot of people who are here are there to try to get enough to stay there in one of these layers that is a fantasy of theirs. So they are both the clients, but also the employees. So it's sort of like, imagine like an employee discount. Okay.
Yeah.
So imagine though, if it was like basically the only thing that brought you any pleasure or joy was your company. So like that's how deep most of these people are. In fact, we have this idea of factions from Blades in the Dark. And for me, for Steeplechase, these factions are going to be represented by different groups within the company, but also denizens of different layers. Because we've been divorced from a space or a region, a physical geography that we are living in, we're inherently tribal creatures, right? So we are drawn to creating these tribes to form our identity. And for these people, their identity is where they work, right?
Yeah.
They're not just a maintenance man. They are part of the Cogs and Gears, which is the faction of maintenance people, because that's how deeply they identify with that and how much that means to them. If you are—
I remember working at Best Buy, and for whatever reason, we decided our store had a rivalry with another store. Who the fuck cares? But, like, that was a thing, and then we, like, went to a conference and, like, chanted at them. It was horrifying. Anyways, I can really relate to this.
If you are an employee, if you are a cast member, let's say, of Infinitum, which is the sci-fi layer— it was the second layer that Dentonic built. But if you're an employee of Infinitum, then you are a member of the Sidereal Age, which is your faction of people that are from the sci-fi world. So you need to stay on the good side. And you might encounter people from these other layers. That is a possibility, even though travel between the two is not that common when you're an employee or a guest.
Is the end game us trying to reach the Heaviside layer? Because if so, I need to know now. Because I'm going to change my character dramatically. If that's
a great point,
case.
Griffin, let me just take my book of all the things I was going to do for the next few months, and okay, it's in the trash because you already guessed.
I get to be old Deuteronomy.
Yes, it's purgatory.
You can't just call that, Dad.
Steeplechase is purgatory. You win. Okay. Anyway, does that answer your question, Travis?
Yes, it does. How big of an employer in this world is Dentonic?
Yeah. Well, what do you think?
I mean, it kind of feels like, to compare it to, and I hope past Session Zero, we can not compare it to Disney constantly, but to think about that you have Disney World, right? The Disney World, Disneyland, Euro Disney, right? You have the Disney parks, and then you have the Disney television, and you have Disney movies, and you have Disney stores,
Cruise Line,
and you have Disney,
and, yeah.
Like, so.
Right.
Is it like.
So imagine if all that was boiled down into the parks business. Right. And you can start to get an idea of the scope of this, the sweep of this.
Got it.
Dentonic does not produce outside media. Right. They are not like in the movie business. Okay. They're in this business because no experience that you would have on the outside, no movie, no TV show, no book, nothing would like equal what you are doing there. In fact, that's a little bit of the charm. Is that like you don't exactly know what you're going to be getting into when you're there, right? So that helps it make it seem more immersive too. Because if you're seeing a bunch of characters that you already know, it's like, oh, you're just pretending to be this guy. Okay.
Got it.
Griffin, I believe that leaves you. Tell me about your character.
I will be playing Montrose Pretty is his name. And
it's a fine name.
Montrose Pretty is a slide, is the Blades in the Dark playbook I'm using. Whee! Yay! He loves going down those diagonal things.
Oh, I thought people could get on him and slide down him.
Yes, he is 15 feet long. no, he is a slide is a subtle manipulator and spy, according to the playbook here. There are a few sort of adjacent roles that he does not exactly fit into. There's a playbook called The Spider, which is all about sort of leveraging influence and connections and stuff like that. That's not really him. There's also a Lurk, which is about being incredibly sneaky and dexterous. That is also not him. He is more of a salesman, sort of impresario type. I think his place in the Deltonic, is that it?
Dentonic.
Pentatonics.
Nope. And the Pentatonics is
incorrect.
He was, I think, just a sort of cast member, like a, I don't know if there are mascots here, but if there are mascots here, he would fill that role sort of begrudgingly.
There are, we'll meet him.
While on the side, Montrose had a connection to the underworld, to the seedy belly of crime that happened here, was part of a crew, not a very important part of that crew, and to leave some spaces on the map blank, left that crew on bad terms, and now has this different role working with the others at this arcade, or at least that is what we have talked about so far, although it seems like that might be subject to change. He is, I would say, a charismatic opportunist, and I think he sees a lot of potential in the skills that Fist, Meatly, and...
That is not my name. No. It's Beef.
Please Honestly. Don't make this get more confusing. There's a lot Beef, of proper nouns here.
That Beef and Emmerich bring to the table, and so that is I think, why he is teamed up with them.
Okay.
So yeah, former scoundrel in the traditional sense.
It's worth noting, and I don't know if this is the way this is going to swing, but it is worth noting that characters in Blades in the Dark are not meant to be permanent. They can die. It is not that wild to think of. They can retire. They can leave the game.
They can be arrested.
They can be arrested and sent to prison. This has real actual stakes. And that is all I will say is that
actual stakes, Justin, because it's all make-believe. It won't hurt me, Travis in real life.
If people have a fun time listening to it, that's real.
I guess that's true. Oh, my God. I need a minute.
Can I say my special ability?
I'd love that, Griffin.
I've taken an ability called Cloak and Dagger. One of the items that slides get access to is a fine disguise kit. It's sort of integral to the thing. And I have this vision in my mind of he's always wearing a mask, like a hard light mask. Mm-hmm. I'm envisioning sort of like Hexadecimal from Reboot, where face just kind of like changes to display certain emotions. Okay. Cloak and Dagger allows you to use a disguise or other form of covert misdirection, and then you get bonuses to a roll to confuse or deflect suspicion. When you throw off your disguise, the resulting surprise gives you the initiative in the situation.
Now, are you... So this is a mask you're always wearing?
I think so.
Hmm. How does that figure into your, like, day-to-day life as...
I take it off to eat spaghetti. when I eat my spaghetti, I take it off so I don't get the mask all dirty and messy.
Right, but what is your day job?
We work at this arcade, right?
So you're the guy who work. Oh, have you ever heard of Montrose Pretty? Yeah, he's a very charismatic guy. Yeah, he is. It is weird that he works at an arcade and is always wearing this mask.
Well, it doesn't look like a mask, I assume. Right?
I don't think it's photorealistic. I think it looks like a mask. I think when Mr. Pretty rolls up, like, you are in source. But you know what? He's into that. He's okay with being being memorable.
Creepazoid.
But you're, yeah, but it's also, but it, I just want to really, I'm really trying to drive into this, Griffin.
I really
want to drill down. You're a character that is defined by their ability to sway other people. And on the other hand, you're also a super creep who's always wearing a mask. Like, it's very, I'm trying to align the two in my head.
I have to know, what does the mask look like? Because right now I'm picturing, like, one of those completely neutral, like, just white masks that, like, that one dance troupe, I think is Jabberwocky, wears. It's terrifying. What does it actually look like, please, Griffin?
It's Guy Fawkes. I'm a revolutionary. No, it's not a Guy Fawkes mask. I think it just, it looks like a human face, but slightly exaggerated.
No.
Okay. So like the clear mask that they wear in Heist, like just to hide your, okay, perfect.
Or could if it be you a have Harlequin a constant mask, something that's, I don't want a valley, an uncanny valley here, Griffin. I'm scared.
I think it is an uncanny valley situation, but it's beautiful.
Now, just as long as we're having fun, I'm looking at Griffin's character sheet. I see that Griffin has given himself four items that are completely without purpose because we are not doing a heist right now. But Griffin's just made a note that he's got some weird stuff in his pockets.
Oh, those are load free. So I was like, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I've got all those hack. For sure.
For sure.
Hi, I'm Hal Loveland.
And I'm Mark Gagliardi.
And we're the hosts of We Got This with Mark and Hal, the weekly show where we settle the debates that are most important to you.
That's right. What arguments are you and your friends having that you just can't settle?
Apples or oranges?
Marvel or DC?
Fork versus spoon?
Chocolate or vanilla?
Best bagel?
What's the best Disney song?
We Got This with Mark and Hal. Every week on Maximum Fun, we do the arguing so you don't have to.
Oh, all answers are final for all people for all time.
We got this.
Most game shows quiz contestants about topics they don't even care about.
But for more than 100 episodes, the Go Fact Yourself podcast has asked celebrity guests trivia about topics they choose for themselves.
And introduced them to some of their personal heroes along the way.
Oh my gosh.
Shut up.
Oh, I feel like I'm going to cry.
Oh my stars.
So excited.
Join me, J. Keith Van Stratton.
And me, Helen Hong, along with guests like DJ Jazzy Jeff, Yardley Smith, Roxanne Gay, and so many more on the trivia game show podcast, Go Fact Yourself.
Twice a month, every month on Maximum Fun.
Okay, so those are our three characters. Next, we are going to make a crew. And this part is a little more less like defined at this point.
Yeah.
Oh, well, let me talk first about the different types of characters. Next, we are going to make a crew. And this part is a little more less like defined at this point.
Yeah.
Oh, well, let me talk first about the different types of crews that we have very briefly.
We've never played a game that had this particular right. element in it where like the organization is just as much a game mechanic as the individual characters.
The
are.
Crew is a character. Think of it that way. And actually, if you want to be particular about it, the crew is the constant.
Yeah.
These cats can come and go, but the crew, and you know, we could even like find some if there's another person who wants to join. I mean, eventually this crew is going to be, I mean, God willing and the creek don't rise. I have a lot of people other than you all, right? It will be an expansive criminal empire if all goes according to plan. So we have several different crew types that you can choose from. We've got, hold on, assassins, which, I mean, does what it says right on the tin there.
Why play in the game what we already do in real life? That doesn't seem fun.
No, Travis.
Mercenaries, don't tell them. Mercenaries and thugs are bravos. If you're a bravo crew, then you start battles, extortion, sabotage, smash and grabs, burly criminals. Cult is acolytes of a god. In this case, I'm not exactly sure what the analog would be, but I'm sure we could have some fun with it. Hawkers sell vice. They sell vice items.
or different types of vice. Shadows are thieves and spies who do burglaries and espionage and robberies and sabotage. And then smugglers transport contraband. They execute clandestine deliveries, territory control, and expeditions outside the city. So those are the ones we have to choose from. What are you all – we had talked about hawkers. How are we feeling about that right now?
Based on what you have told us about this world, I think that owning a small business is a fun idea from a gameplay perspective. You'd also talked about how these layers are separated.
Yes.
And so smugglers also seems like it would be, a narratively it would fit. I worry that the jobs would get a little bit samey if it's just get this thing from one place to another. But hawkers is what we had discussed before this episode.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like the. I think I can also see in this world how hawkers has the most growth potential as a business goes. Where I can see the, especially as you talk about like the LAYER layers expanding through those, instead of it being like everybody has to come to us to get the jobs done, we're trying to expand our influence of being able to sell this stuff or offer whatever our goods and services are.
I think that's good. I'm kind of interested in Bravos because that also sounds like a lot of flexibility. Battles, extortion, sabotage, smash and grabs.
I will say, Dad, I think that the only thing I would push back against Bravos is that it sounds like you have two people who are physically not super threatening. So that for a crew that is built around like physical violence and physical actions, Bravos may not be the best fit because you don't have a lot of the muscle.
I also would worry because I thought about Bravos too because Beef would do well there, but I also worry that in a park like this, in a setting like this, I worry that being too aggressive and like smash and grab kind of thing is going to draw a lot of attention from like potentially we could get fired, which isn't like a thing that would happen if we were just like playing in a New York City, you know, kind of place where it's just like, oh, we got to go underground for a while. But if somebody's like, yeah, Beef broke that window,
show up to work the next day. Yeah. It also seems like if we have this hard light pioneer and this, famous boxer and this charismatic salesman, like it seems like those align with hawkers really well. Yeah. It's just a question of what do we hawk?
That kind of eliminates shadows too, because it'd be a lot harder to be a spy if everybody knows who you are.
Hey, that's Beef. I love
hawkers.
Well, let's go with hawkers. Yeah. You want to stick with hawkers?
Okay. Yeah, Juice, can you describe vice in like a short way? Because I feel like that will inform what we hawk. Because vice is a mechanic in the game.
Right. Yes. Let me search for vice real quick.
Let's mention the Blades in the Dark website. If you are curious about this game, you should buy it and get the book and read it because it's one of the coolest like RPG books I've ever read. But there is also this online resource with which you can like look up anything we talk about very easily.
So Vice is something that you would use to blow off some steam.
Which is an actual mechanic in the game.
They call it stress. But that is what vice is. It is what you do to cope with the stress of what you do in your day-to-day lives, which could be gambling, it could be luxury, it could be
religion,
faith, obligation.
Weird
is one of them.
Is a good one. Weird. Yeah. Oh, obligation is interesting. So vice is not just a metaphor for drugs and alcohol, right? You could have an obligation to your family, and which is your vice. Like your vice is that I have these two rotten kids that I have to take care of. Like, I mean, that could be your vice.
Yeah. If you think about it in the Fast and the Furious terms, it's like, oh, I would do anything for family, even like get myself in trouble, that kind of thing.
Right. Know? Exactly. You can overindulge in vices, which has bad consequences, but
pleasure and stupor are the other two vices that we haven't mentioned yet. I feel like we are missing a trick if we do not focus what our like hawker business is around the fact that we employ a famous boxer and a hard light pioneer. I have an idea.
Okay.
And I think that this could fit in really well with what used to been kind of represents, but taking it to this like extreme that would not be approved by the, you know, the higher ups. What if we could use your intellect, Beef, and your hard light skills, Emmerich, and create moments you can spend with the dead that we recreate based on your description of some past person, and then you can spend time with them.
That's tough because like there's several places in Used-to-Bin that do that. Like that is a big part of the service they offer. I am interested in the fact that they Dentonic is peddling vice. Like they are dealing vice. Like they're dealing like the immersive fantasy experiences. So like I don't want something that overlaps with that because they are peddling vice. Like, you know, right. So it's like at a certain point it's like redundant. You know what I mean? Like you can't operate within that.
Then one way to think about it is, you know, if they are very, very, very strict about keeping the different layers separated, right? Mm-hmm. Insulated from each other, correct? Mm-hmm. That is the key to what we do if we're going to have an illegal, a reason for our illegal existence.
Okay.
Right?
I have a thought that I want to hit you guys with.
Hit us.
What if you are smugglers, but what you are doing is smuggling, you're basically peddling to Dentonic fans on the outside? So, like, what you're doing is you are stealing things from from Steeplechase that you can knock then offs. Sell to. No. The real shit.
The real deal.
I mean,
you are stealing things from Steeplechase that you can sell to collectors on the outside.
Oh, I like that.
How does that grab you guys?
I like that a lot. That gives us a lot of reasons to go to the different layers.
Travis, Griffin, you seem unmoved.
I'm trying to think of how that would complement our characters.
Like, one thing I wanted to throw out that I thought of as a vice that we had not considered, luxury, but for employees. So you talk about the suites, right? This luxury experience that everyone's trying to earn money for, right? So like the toiletries, towels, a manicure experience like they get, you're talking about at the slumber parties, or these kinds of like luxury experiences, but we are hawking them to employees that the employee can pay for the same kind of luxury experience that a guest would have.
That's interesting. Because what you're talking about is, yes, I like that a lot because you aren't relying on guests to fund the venture. You're peddling to, whether or not it's luxury, I feel like that's the angle, right? It's like, what is the vice that people who work there, I mean, that idea of luxury.
Any vice that a guest would want.
I like the luxury idea, but like, what does it look in a concrete state? Like, what is like the practical application of what you're talking about? Do you have a hotel? Do you have a spa behind the arcade? I mean, what is it that you're...
What if this is how we leverage the hard light thing? What if it is like a hidden in plain sight, like the Mirage, and it is a place that employees know where it is, and we are able to cloak it with Emmerich's like hard light capabilities.
Or the other way around is the hard light is what creates
the like spa experience. And otherwise, yeah. It's an empty room, right? So it is a thing we can take with us when we go to different layers of like, we take the Mirage with us and offer this luxury experience.
Okay. Building on both of these ideas, what do you think about this? So what you're stealing is the, or what you're trying to accumulate are hard light programs
mm-hmm.
that you don't have. Like you're going to the other layers to find elements that you can use in the Mirage and make the Mirage, which could be on the different layers. There could be hidden Mirages, you know, throughout as you expand, right? To the different layers to have Mirages on each one. And you're basically like improving the experience for employees.
You know what it's
That's
like?
That's very thematically, for what I'm thinking about for the arc, thematically very satisfying.
But it's also, Trent. What it reminds me of is like, when I worked in the Best Buy warehouse, and it was literally like there's space between these two refrigerators back to back if you want to go just like lay down and you can't see it on camera, and like you can like lay down back there and the bosses won't know where you are, right?
This we idea, did the same thing.
Yeah. Taking a break
we
on
company
time.
We did the same thing
time.
when I worked at Bartram Brothers, and back in the stock room, we used to build gigantic forts out of paper towel and toilet paper boxes that the bosses didn't know about, and we'd sneak back like there for breaks.
What about like the liminal room, like the space between layers that fulfills this role for
that's
for
it's occupied.
Employees. The liminal layer is occupied.
Yeah. Okay. So I don't know what you have heard from what we have been discussing in the past 20 minutes. Rachel's probably used
you might have
it.
Just heard a big record scratch.
Yeah. So, guys, talk to me about where we're at. Let's recap this Hawkers. What are you all selling? Where are you doing it, etc.
So, here is what we're looking at. Right, we ran through the different vices that a hawker could hawk, and what we realized was any vice that a guest would want is already being catered to by the park, right? Whatever the experience is. And that means that the opportunity that the market is employees. So what we offer is a luxury experience in that it is basically like a hard light break room, a hard light sneak away, take a nap on the company dime kind of experience for employees, where we have a hard light projector that we can set up in an empty room or whatever to be this luxury experience for them, and then breaks down in an instant and we can carry with us. And so we are trying to expand this idea to have more of these programs, to have more of these projectors, so we can have these like kind of secret break rooms generating money for us. If you've ever seen like rent by like 15 minute nap rooms in airports sometimes, it's kind of like that. That's what we want to set up.
So let's Mirages seems like a really cool way to refer to these things. Where are you? Time has forgotten who came up with it.
It was Griffin 10 minutes ago.
You know, it's
there
it's
was
so hard.
A season of Friends at the Table called Twilight Mirage. That was sort of about
they stole it from us in the past.
Holographic.
We'll try not to call it Mirage, but it's basically like what it. I mean,
it
it's
is
like
a
such a good name. I mean, there's a reason they use that because it's like it's like the best thing to call
the charade. The YouTube. I'm on
Twilight Room.
It doesn't matter. Twilight Room.
Nirvana.
We'll come up with something.
Yeah. You all go into weird dictionaries and come up with something good. Where do you operate out of? What's like your home base?
So right now, because I want to stick with the arcade so bad, I think we're just right now operating in the back room of an arcade that the maybe kindly old boss lets us use that room.
So there's a kindly old boss.
I think so.
There's a kindly old boss who does not.
What's his name?
Poppy.
Mervin.
Poppy Mervin?
Perfect.
Poppy Mervin.
See, that's all it takes sometimes. You guys said this would be easy. I had no idea how easy.
Yeah, I told you.
Just wait for two people to say things, squish them together, and you got a new character named Poppy Mervin. Poppy Mervin, and he runs this arcade, which is called
Poppy's Place.
It's called Poppy's Place. What kind of games do they have at Poppy's Place?
So I think it is like skee ball and air. I think it's like full blown
boardwalk arcade.
Yeah, boardwalk arcade.
Okay. Well, your Punch-Out game needs to be in there too.
Right? Oh yeah.
Well, but they have those. They have those like speed bag games at this type of establishment. I feel like so instead of it being like
maybe it's like also like an arm wrestling, one of those where it's like the fake arm is up.
Fuck,
and it's like
yes.
Beef's arm.
Yeah. I want to see a bunch of like
okay, yeah. Beef wasn't
beefs.
A boxer; he was a professional arm wrestler.
Really? Okay, great.
Yeah.
Whack-a-vole. A vole pops up out of the ground.
That's
so the punchly part was more of a threat. Like, if the arm wrestling doesn't go good, I know my last name. Well,
one
no,
could be,
sorry.
It could be
it's
snakes.
Just his, it's just his last name.
It's just his last name. I don't know what to tell you.
It has nothing to do with punching.
Yeah. Beef Love Leverage is a different guy. We don't talk about Beef Leverage.
I hope you guys know that the more kindly you make Poppy Mervin, the higher the likelihood that you will have to kill him. Like, I'm just telling you now. Okay, so your crew is starting out at Poppy's Place. We are going to choose, you are tier zero, which means that you're barely even a thing. You have a stronghold, which means that you're pretty tight on your place that you're in. You have two coin. To use to further your ambitions, and zero reputation. You're just formed. You got your home base. Given what you've done, what kind of reputation do you feel like, if any, do you think that you have with the rest of the of Steeplechase?
I don't. The rest of Steeplechase, not much.
Nothing.
I think because it just depends on how much crossover there is, like. You know, maintenance people that maybe move from park to park or layer to layer. Maybe there's like one or two of those who have been to our break room and have like gone to other things and mentioned it to other people.
This would also be how you boost your reputation is how you advance your crew. So if you think about the kinds of things that you would like to be perceived, right, that would increase this reputation, the sorts of actions you'd like to take.
And this is a thing we are choosing off of a list. So can I read the reputation?
Ambitious, brutal, daring, honorable, professional, savvy, subtle, or strange.
I think maybe it's subtle. This idea of like you're not going to get in trouble, like your secret is safe if you use this thing. Like if you go take a break on the company dime or whatever, your secret is safe. They know how to keep their lips shut.
Okay, Dad, how do you feel about that?
Yeah. I like that.
Okay.
That also helps in the big scheme when people are like, hey, I've heard that discretion is like your strong suit. I have another job for you.
Yeah.
That requires that, right? So, like, I think that it's a good balance of doing the job and doing our goal and how those grow each other's influence.
You guys know yourselves, right? Like, you know the way that this has all gone before, right? And you understand what you are saying to me, the facilitator of your fantasies, is that what you want to do this time, the watchword is subtlety. This is what you're saying.
We're
this
trying something new.
You know, I will not advance you as a crew if you're like, we blew up the whole building.
Well, no, as long as we don't track that dookie back home. Right? So that's fine. As long as we don't bring that noise down on our clients.
Subtlety. Tasteful, subtle operators. Okay, so you're subtle. Okay. I am not going to establish a hunting ground specifically right now because that is not a mechanic that I am needing to deal with at this exact moment, and I want to leave some room to find out about it. Choose a special ability.
There is a list here of special abilities. I'm not going to read them off all because it would be a long time, but is there one that appeals to one or more of you? If you look at that special abilities box there in gray.
I mean, I know it's the first one, but Silver Tongue.
I like Silver Tongues. I also kind of like Ghost Market, but that brings up questions for Juice, like, do hard light people come to our thing? We do not discriminate. They do not pay in coin. What do they pay with?
I mean, we could do the good stuff since we have a pioneer of hard light in our crew.
And isn't that what we're offering our customers? Is high quality, I mean, good stuff? I mean, they're there to get the best of the best.
I Silver Tongues is appealing to me because that is very much the character I am playing.
And if we're playing subtle, right? If we're playing subtle, I think the three of us being good at, like, talking to people is a safe bet.
Also, right? I don't think any of us have command.
I do. I have one in command.
It seems like having more command, like being able to make people afraid. I can convince people of anything. I think if we do this one, I would have 3 points in sway.
I mean, if you take that one, like you can put it in one of those three.
Yes.
This is one special ability for the whole crew, correct?
Correct.
Yes.
I think that's the way to go. As much as I like the good stuff, I think, okay, so Justin, here's what we've decided. Since, as you have said, the watchword is subtlety, we are going to choose Silver Tongues as our special ability as a crew.
All right, so you all are taking Silver Tongues.
Yeah, we're taking Silver Tongues, and so we each get to add one to Command, Consort, or Sway. Now, I can't see Dad or Griffin's character sheets, but I already have one in Command, and Command is basically to intimidate or threaten, lead an action with one of the crew's gangs, command obedience with your force of personality. I think I'm going to take that.
Yeah.
That another feels... point there to have 2 points in command.
I have two in sway. I might actually take one in consort because if we are trying to peddle our wares to other organizations with the park, it seems like being able to talk to them on a sort of broad scale. Sway is more like convincing someone of something or using deception. Consort is like hitting the streets and like having contacts.
Yeah.
And I think that that would be much more valuable for Montrose Pretty.
So I need to add one to.
You can choose.
Command, consort,
command,
or sway.
Consort, or sway. I have two in consort and sway. Trav has two in command.
Do you have any right now, Dan?
Well, sway would sure help me in trying to influence the hard light structures, wouldn't it?
It wouldn't. No, sway would be, you would use a tune for that. Like, because sway would be someone who has independent will, which a hard light construction would not. So you couldn't convince a computer of anything, right? It would just
Now, I think it would make sense that if you said that Emmerich, because of his former career as a creation ear, has contacts in, you know, maintenance or contacts in that kind of thing for consort, that would make a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, like people you know, Dad, like previously, right. Like might be a good one. It's up to you, though.
Okay. I'll put it in consort.
Okay. All right. Let's see. What's next for us?
We need to pick up two upgrades.
Two upgrades. We're not going to read this list. Just tell me what two upgrades you guys want.
There's a lot. It feels like hidden would be great for us.
Yeah.
Hidden is an upgrade. Your lair has a secret location and is disguised to hide it from view. If your lair is discovered, use two downtime activities and pay coin equal to your tier to relocate it and hide once again.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so we're going to take hidden. And then one more. The ones up at the top in the gray box are like kind of recommended. So I don't know if any of those look interesting to you all.
Oh man, I like Hawker's rigging because I like being able to conceal things.
It seemed like it would be up Dad's alley too, but I didn't know if that looked good to you guys.
Yeah,
I think that would aid, especially in field operations.
Yeah, I agree.
Perfect. That's also going to be good for y'all because you'll be traveling away from your home base a lot. So
yeah,
that makes sense.
And especially if we take our projector thing with us, if we're taking technology with us. We don't want our shit to get confiscated or else.
Yeah. So here's what I'd like to do very briefly. If you could look at the map that I have made for you of Eustabin, if you could load that up. Obviously, the people at home can't see this, and I don't want to like go over all the different areas of Eustabin. This is sort of like your neck of the woods. This doesn't encompass the entirety of the park, this map. But it is.
Oh, that's very pretty, Justin.
Thank you, Dad. I will give 5 adventure points, which is, by the way, a currency that I've invented for my arc. When you do something good, you can earn adventure points that are redeemable for prizes at the end of the arc. So 5 adventure points to the first person that can tell me what this is a map of.
It's Camden Park.
Nope.
No?
Damn it. Nope.
Is it
Cedar Point?
Nope. The roller coaster is your big hint.
Kings Island.
Which part?
Racer? I mean, that's the roller coaster.
That's the racer, exactly.
This is Coney Island?
Yeah, this is the Coney Island area from like mid-70s.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Anyway, there's a map of all the different nostalgic experiences. We're not talking about Prize Palace today, but are there any others that you are interested in or would like to hear more about? Or you feel like, so here's what I'm thinking. You do not have a lot of expansive context outside of Eustabin for the moment. We will blow that out once things start. But right now, in place of like steeplechase-wide factions, I'd like to think of these like different stores and restaurants of Eustabin as like little factions just for this first outing. So is there any that you like have a relationship with, any that you feel like we want to establish some narrative hooks with, like something that you have a history with? Or ones that you wanted to like know more about, very briefly.
Whittle Around, you had mentioned, was Hardlight based of like, you know, there's grandpas.
Whittle Around is, if you ever seen like an old timey TV show or movie and you see an old grandpa and he's like sitting on the porch and he's whittling.
Yeah.
I've never actually seen anybody do that in real life. And most people who
I have, I do it, but.
Well, you're not a denizen of this futuristic world, Dad. So,
not yet.
Like,
yet.
It just gives you that experience of whittling around. Now, for a exorbitant fee, they will take images, videos, details about your own grandpa and recreate him as a very basic hard light projection. I mean, he's not going to like have great memories of your lives together, but if you want to pretend, you can have your grandpa in there for a price.
That's what about the Anacro Knickknacks?
Anacro Knickknacks is a store that sells physical objects that are no longer produced. There are like handles for rolling up and down car windows. If you ever wanted to experience that, you can. They have rotary phones in there. They have different devices. They have like record players, cassette players, all the like outdated technology, things that shouldn't exist anymore, but they have found.
And what is Backseat Blast?
Backseat Blast is actually an extremely popular attraction in Eustabin. In Backseat Blast, you have the experience of sitting in the back seat of your parents' car, and it's raining a little bit outside. It's the evening, and you've just been at a party, and you're listening to your Discman, but you have the volume quiet enough that you can listen to your parents talking in the front seat as the window windshield wipers move back and forth, and you listen to your music, and you know with complete certainty that you are as safe as you will ever be. And that's Backseat Blast. And it's just 20. Yeah. And yeah, it's actually very affordable. It's $20 for a spin on Backseat Blast. If you want the parents to look like your parents, they do have some like free standard parents that you can go with, but that's up to you.
Are they huge too? Are the cars big to make you feel small?
Exactly. Okay, exactly. Like yes, Griffin. They're very big cars.
What about All Mixed Up?
All Mixed Up is a store where there are 30 radios playing to different AI-generated stations, and you are given a cassette where you have to dash from radio to radio to create a mixtape of songs that you love.
Hi, Dad. I like the idea of our crew contact being somebody who is higher up at one of these places who uses our services. And
how about a former co-worker of Emmerich's?
Hmm.
who stayed in good favor. Maybe, maybe somebody that was instrumental in getting Emmerich pushed out, but Emmerich doesn't know it.
Okay. Well, yeah, it doesn't need to be too complex because we're going to be out of here pretty quickly. But like, if you want to say like a former, where do they work, Dad?
Personally, I would like him to work at Infinitum because I want to go there.
Oh, I know. But we're just staying in Eustabin. It's just stuff for this first like little chunk.
I would say the two that sound the most hard lighty to me are Whittle Around and Backseat Blast, right? That they would require programmers, right? People who would program grandpas and program parents. Mm-hmm. So I think it would make sense that if the connection is like somebody who worked with Emmerich, that either Whittle Around or Backseat Blast would make the most sense.
Dad, do you have a preference?
I have an odd thought.
Okay.
What if the basic grandpa hard light construct is one of Emmerich's earliest creations, and he considers him to be his friend?
Right. Oh shit! So instead of it being fun. Yeah, so our that's contact fun. Is a hard light.
Dad, what is your hard light grandpa friend's name? What's your imaginary grandpa friend? What's his name?
Eustace, Eustace.
Eustace Ben?
Eustace Chabon.
He has a last name? Okay. Eustace Chabon. The hologram. hold on. Let me make a quick note about who he is, because I will remember, but you guys may not. He is a hard light grandpa.
Yeah.
Really and important the fact to remember that he's been... Hard light constructs are AI. They are not people. I want to make this really clear going in.
I know. Okay. I know.
All right.
But that's the world that Emmerich lives in.
Okay.
I mean, I think Eustace is because he's been reprogrammed so many times, you know, and changed form so many times, he has a very bad memory.
Okay. All right. So you have a friend there over at the Whittle Around, who is a hard light grandpa.
Eustace Chabon, the first grandpa, sounds like a From Software boss.
All right. Now, this is a plus one you have with him. One, I need somebody else to come up with somebody you hate in Eustabin.
You know what? I'm going to say the proprietor of Anacro Knickknacks.
Oh,
we've okay. had to deal with to like get parts for things.
What is their name, Griffin?
I don't know. Tell me more about them, Travis.
Well, they're a real company person. And so we have to be really careful about how we ask for the pieces. And they're really nosy. And they are trying to figure out what we're doing.
First off,
I've just discovered that I have no idea how to spell the word proprietor. Here we are. I like the idea that there are some hard light things that aren't worth programming, and it's just easier to get the things from an Acro Knickknacks. It's just too, have you ever tried to model a, you know, whatever it is, the wax cylinder on a Victrola? It's easier to just get the fucking thing.
Well, and we there's not like a Radio Shack for us to go to get technology. You only take apart so many machines before people start to notice. So sometimes you have to like buy, you know, old timey stuff to use in place of other things.
And just like that, I have the name. His name is Victrola Gold.
Victrola Gold. Okay, great. Fantastic. Okay, so we have established someone you don't like, someone you do like. That's all very well and good. The last thing I wanted to touch on real quick, in terms of sort of like red lines or things that we feel like are sort of out of bounds for this, if we're setting some like parameters, which is something we've tried to be better about modeling, even though, you know, it's the four of us, we all know each other pretty well, so there's not as much discomfort, but you know, I do think it's an important thing to sort of establish. So for me, one of the things that I don't enjoy and will not be part of this arc is like violence against kids.
Yep.
I don't love it, and I don't want to hang out there. I would also.
I mean, how many kids? Related question: like, how many kids are here? Right? Because this does not sound like a child-friendly experience necessarily in the sense that it is like a nostalgia play for...
I'll say this. You don't see a lot of kids in Eustabin, for sure.
Okay.
That is about what you know, I think. I mean, yeah. You don't see a lot of kids in your neck of the woods because, like, they're living the dream. I mean, they're creating the nostalgia. That's where they make it, you know, childhood.
I also think, I mean, I think it's important just to establish as a baseline, too, because we're talking about, like, vice and fantasy and stuff. And anything related to human trafficking or, like, sex trafficking is off the table, I think.
There being a distinction between sex work and human trafficking.
Yeah.
Of course.
Anything else that anybody does? I will not be protracted torture. Not. And then I know we're nasty characters, but
that's a little too nasty.
Little too nasty for me.
Yeah, and I think the level of violence, or at least
high.
High violence. But I think, in all seriousness, I think almost to the like Deadpool level. You know what I mean? So it's still
fun violence.
Yeah, fun violence.
That's what I do.
And Dad, you should know by this point, everything I do in my creative endeavors, I strive to be like Deadpool.
Yeah.
So he is something of an icon and a hero for me. So we will aim for Deadpool.
Well, okay, but I mean, there's a subtle difference between a James Bond movie where he's mowing down people left and right.
If it's important to you personally, okay, that there be, I need you to be specific about this because it is something that like this will be. This is a violent game. This can be a nasty game. So like if there's specific things that you want to avoid, like that's the kind of thing we're talking about here.
I love it all. I don't have any problem with it.
Okay, great.
So
my dad's a nasty dog who loves murder.
Well, this is where I think we can get into like the X card and the red, yellow, and green.
So we have a verbal X card on because we're an audio medium and it's just easier that way because who knows what you'll be looking at. If you say, hey, bud, then that means I'm going to stop and we're going to talk about what's happening.
Well, that's not it's not a magic catchphrase. We would say like, hey, bud, I'm uncomfortable with this because there might be times where our characters say, hey, bud, and
they can't. They better not because it's a secret. It's the verbal X card that I have established. Tell me something, Griffin, that would be a good verbal X card that you... that I could say with certainty that you will not be saying.
Parcheesi.
Parcheesi? It's not a sexual
safe word. Afghanistan banana stand.
Okay, what we're going to go with is hey, bud. So if something is uncomfortable with you, just say hey, bud, and we'll talk through it. Okay. And that'll either be on mic or it won't. Okay, so now I'd like to close. It is... time isn't that important here, but for simplicity's sake, let's call it 1 p.m. at over at Poppy's. What Emmerich, what do I find you doing?
Tinkering. I just came off my lunch break.
Okay.
Very sad. You know, I had a little cucumber sandwich and I ate it back in the corner. And then I go back to tinkering on I still have a few minutes left in my lunch break. So I'm working on a personal project.
Montrose?
There's a new hire here, who works at the, concession stand. And I'm trying to sort of gauge subtly their interest in our product.
Okay. And Beef?
Beef is arm wrestling the machine and like loudly proclaiming like so realistic, just like the real thing, me in my prime, and like trying to get attention to it. And I don't know, he's probably not that convincing.
At that exact moment, it was 1:03 p.m. There was a loud sort of crack, unworldly, impossibly loud, the sound of a crack outside above you. What would you all do? Don't overthink it, guys.
Yeah, I'm going to peek outside cautiously.
Okay. Emmerich, are you going to take a look?
I think take a look, but kind of position myself behind Beef.
Okay. And then Montrose.
I don't want to break my stride here, so I'm just going to kind of keep an eye on the other two. and see what their reaction's like before I decide.
So you're standing in relative proximity. The sky in Eustabin is, during the daytime at least, always the same. It's the way the sky looks on a snow day, where you wake up and it's brighter than it should be. It's impossibly bright because the sunlight is being reflected off the drifts of snow. It's always that color in Eustabin, except for right now, at this exact moment, you hear another crack and you see above you a break in the sky. It looks to be maybe 1,000 feet across. And then it cracks more. And you see that it's starting to crack into something that approximates a rectangle, a gigantic, thousands of feet wide rectangle. And then the sky starts falling. But as it falls, what you realize is that it is not 1,000 feet of sky. It's maybe 6 or 7. It's 6 or 7 feet of sky that thousands of feet of sky have been projected onto. Above it is only blackness, and you see the metal, the projection screen that was just above you a moment ago, careen down towards the ground, and you see a woman on it. She's wearing a black trench coat. She's got 3 knives sticking out from back behind her. Her face is covered in soot, and she's got a balaclava pulled down just to her forehead, and she is falling. She is falling, and the piece of ground, piece of sky now, ground, smashes below her, but she does not smash. She is hanging. You realize she is hanging 6 feet off the ground, suspended by a wire from a hole in the sky, and she looks at you, and she says, "Well, fuck!" And that's where we'll start.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.